Hello, my name's Hetty Perkins, and along with Jonathan Jones, I'm the co-curator of Riverland, Yvonne Kulmutri, here at the Art Gallery of South Australia. And this exhibition is part of Tanundi, a festival of contemporary Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander art. And we're here today with the school group from Hampstead Primary, talking with the artist Yvonne Kulmutri.
My name is Yvonne Kulmutri, and I'm a Ngarrindjeri person, and I'm a weaver.
When I walked in the other day, what day was it? Yesterday. Mm-hmm. I was shocked. I just didn't realise all the pieces that I created. When I attended my first workshop, it was only one day's workshop. And so this is the future generation to carry on this culture. So maybe one of you will get the idea of weaving, and maybe one day you can create all the things you see here. How do you do it?
How is weaving significant to the Ngarrindjeri culture?
It is my tradition, Ngarrindjeri weaving, to me and to whoever. Yeah, it is very, because it's my mum's culture, and I'm carrying on this tradition as well for her. She's passed away. In about the 80s, there was an article, you know what an article saying it was extinct. Do you know what extinct means? Do anyone know what extinct means?
Like no more and the species gone.
Yeah, no one's weaving anymore. No one's carrying on that tradition. And that's what happened in about 82. There was an article come out, someone wrote that no one's doing weaving anymore and it's just dying out. But little did they know, there was my auntie, which she passed away, my teacher. She come and she had a workshop for one day with about 16 students. And I was one of the hardest that come out of that workshop in 82. And then I revived it again, all these pieces. If I didn't attend that workshop, that you wouldn't see any more weaving. None of this. There wouldn't be any weaving.
And Arnie makes the work, so she's making some of the more traditional works that people have used for, you know, many, many generations in the Riverland to get the eels and fish and so on.
Yeah.
But then, and weapon bags that the men would carry.
That's the weapon bags up there. See what the men made. There would be what? How old?
Those ones are about almost about 80 or... 80 years old, you think?
80 years old. So you see, with this grass, with this material, it's the sage grass, that if you make something, that's how long it's going to last. 80 years. Ngarrindjeri country is down the Coorong, right on the Coorong lakes, mm-hmm. and part of the river, or it seemed to be all one, but the Coorong, the person that taught me, she come from Point Maclay, Raukan. She was a Ngarrindjeri person as well. Yeah. And that's her basket there.
With the handle.
Yeah, with the handle on it. Then the other one there, that's my mum's basket. And she was my student at 94 years old. That's her first basket. Although I lived on the Coorong and, you know, spent a fair many years down there, but I never ever seen any carvings on rocks or anything down there. And I thought, that's very sad. You know, everyone talks about the Coorong, about the ocean, about the Coorong, about the fish and everything else that, you know, how the old people used to live. And I thought, I'll create something, I'll do a story, mat, and put those pieces in and put that story into a mat. So that's the first mat that has been made by an Ngarrindjeri person. Even all of Australia, no one else has ever made a story mat.
Mm. Auntie has made these story mats, and you can see, I'm sure you've all noticed in there, a lot of the things that you see in the exhibition, they're all in that story mat, and that's why Auntie's made them, because they're like a book of, you know, Ngarrindjeri culture that future generations like yourselves can see and learn and study all those traditional things. So it's a traditional form of art, but Auntie Yvonne has made it contemporary. You know, she makes it in the modern day. It's very modern part of our culture now as well.
Who introduced you to weaving, and how long have you been weaving?
I've been weaving since 82. Thirty-three years. Yeah, about 33, going on for 34 years. Yeah.
And who introduced you?
There was this one lady left. Although she was sick, she wanted to pass on the tradition to the 16 that was in that workshop. And she had one day's workshop with us, so we couldn't go back and bother. I couldn't go back and ask her, what am I doing wrong? When she taught me, I thought all the material look alike, so I went out and picked the big bundle. It was the wrong material, so I had to throw it away. Then I got cunning. On one of the pieces that she taught me had the little three prong on the top, and I carried that with me to identify the material, what material to use. Yeah. Of course, all grass look alike. But if you feel that, or you'll feel the grass in the minute when we run our workshop. But 34 years to create most of these pieces here.
Why do you choose to make animals, and what inspires you?
I love nature. I love animals. How I done the echidna? I was travelling back one day from interstate, and I seen him laying on the road. The big truck ran over him, because a lot of people don't really worry about animals. And I thought, that's very sad, you know, he's laying there. So I picked him up, I've taken him home, and I weaved his body. I created him again, and I got his quills out of him, and I put all those quills back. So he lives forever now. He lives forever.
Yep. And sometimes you hide things inside the echidna.
Sometimes I didn't know if anyone else was going to take on weaving like me. So with the echidna, inside of the echidna is some of this material, and I left some little seeds in there. Maybe many years, or half to 80 odd years, it'll most probably reveal itself, then people be able to identify the material that I used to weave with.
Like a time capsule?
It is a time capsule, yeah.
There's sort of imagination and creativity.
It's all imagination, yeah. Because I do go back to the places where traditional people used to live many, many, many years ago, and where they used to have their big feast with all the shell mussels and all that. So I do spend a lot of time down at places like that. And I sort of go back and I sort of dream of how it would be to, you know, the young mothers have to get up first thing in the morning, and they haven't got any shops to just go there and get food for the children. They have to go and find it and carry their babies with them. And they really never had no doonas or any of those things. So I go back into time and I remember those people. I think of those people. And that was it. That's what inspires me, you know. I think to myself, I'd love to have been around in that time just to absorb all that knowledge and wisdom. But then I think I'm doing okay now, you know. I think I'm doing okay, yeah.
What has been the most difficult thing you have weaved?
The woman, the 3D woman. She's not here. She is, whose size would she be? She's a 4. She's sitting up weaving. She's got a basket in her hands, and she got the material, and she's sitting up weaving. That was the artist's part. Not this, not her body, but her toes and her fingers. That was the challenge. her toes and her fingers, yeah.
And that's in the catalogue?
And a picture of that. That'll come out in the catalogue. And at her feet is a baby. Because the mother have to have a baby. And so the little baby is at her feet in a coolment, little what the traditional people put their babies in. Yeah.
And you did it with the aeroplane. You had to think about how to, like you didn't want to put wire in it, eh?
No. I don't think there's any baskets here. We should have brought some down, that old one I got. It would be the same age as the weapon bag, the basket I got at home. But when this lady made this basket, she put wire in the handles to support it, to make it stronger. But I found out now the wire is rusting and it's breaking all the stitches. So, yeah, I never use wire in my work. Mm. But you look, there's no wire in those pieces there, but they're really firm. And I think 80 years, they look pretty good to me. They look pretty good to me.
Are there different techniques in weaving?
In the stitch? Yes. There is, okay. Are you right? I'll use this. Thumbnail. This is how you start. Okay, you can go over and come through. Or if not, you can come through that way. And that's the two different stitches in here. One's a loose stitch, this one is very tight, if you come from through there. And maybe that's how those baskets, the weapon bags are made with this stitch that I'm doing here. The other ones are more loose stitches. So there's two different styles of weaving, on just putting the stitches. Same thing weaving, but you're bringing the stitch. One is going over, the other one is coming through. Yeah. One's a really firm stitch and the other one's a loose stitch.
Mm. Can you tell us a little bit about that drop stitch as well?
The drop stitch?
Yeah, and making the big opening.
The ripples.
Oh, the ripples. Well, see, the ripples, that represents the kurong, the yarmulkes, and...
And so to make those, how do you do that though? What do you do a bit of, you don't join the stitch? That's what they call that drop stitch, isn't it?
No. Those pieces are done separate. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like how we make the little openings.
No. Those pieces are done separate. I weave them separate and added them in after. Yeah.
So it's those wavy lines.
Yeah, the wavy lines represent the kurong, the yarmulkes. It's the same with the river dreaming here. Those lines represent the river, the Murray, whatever freshwater.
And another type of stitch is the net, isn't it?
Net as well. The net, if you look, don't touch, but just look behind you, that handle that's coming out on that basket there, it looks like a fish net.
Why do the edges snap when you're weaving?
Why do they crack?
Snap.
Snap, okay. They dry. They're too dry. With this material, you pick it green, you take the prickle, and then you lay it in the sun to bleach for 3 weeks. Then all that moisture will go out of that material. So what you do, you put it in a damp towel overnight, maybe for 2 nights. And then that damp towel would put all that moisture back into that material. If it starts splitting, you know it's too dry. So you have to put it back in that damp towel.
Can you tell that story about it was so hot one time you had to jump in the bathtub and keep weaving?
Yeah. Yeah, because I needed to get the work, because where we live in the Riverland, sometimes it gets up to 46 So it's a really hot place to live. So I wanted to get these works out, and well, material love water because then they become pliable. So I just filled the bath up with cold water and sat in there and continued weaving. Yeah. All my rushes was on the floor in pieces. It just looked like an old swan sitting on a nest with all the broken pieces laying around. In Hurley, when I first started doing workshops, and there was a lot of pieces to produce, my hands used to have, sometimes it had no skin on them. But I still continued pulling, cleaning, weaving. But no, my hands are pretty well soft.
Just got those calluses, eh?
Where only you... the calluses, but that's caused through those dales there where I'm going down. Like that all the time.
But picking's hard too, eh?
Yes, picking is very hard. You have to pick so many bundles. Then you've got to clean them. You've got to take the prickle off the end of them because if you dry them with that star prickle on the end, they'll prick you and very sore, very painful. Yeah. So you clean them, you prepare them.
Where do you get your materials from and how?
Where do I get my materials? Well, I live in the Riverland, so along the river. Not too good at this time of the year because we got frost and we didn't have much rain. But I start collecting in October, November, December, January. Autumn, they're still okay to pull, but you will get autumn colours. So you get all those pretty yellows and browns and all that. To get the nice gold, you start picking about October, summer months. Mm. So I get them along the river. Sometimes, if they're not there, you've got to travel down south where there's more rain. If there's no rain where we live in, well, if it's dry, well, then there's no material. You just have to hunt around and see where's the best place. How many hours that would be from the Riverland? About 3 or 4 hours, eh? Mm. Yeah, so you'd have to travel 3 or 4 hours away down south.
We found a little spot out the front of the police station. Out the front of the police station in the city, just a couple of blocks away.
And I said, I'll come and bail you out.
But you've told me stories too about going out on the river and getting eggs, collecting eggs.
Yeah, well,
you've caught all these things. Just
yeah, we even today down Meningi there, not only Aboriginal people, non-Indigenous people, they will go out and they will do swan egg in as well. That's in May, June. And collect, because in one swan egg there's about 6 fowl eggs. So it's a big egg. The traditional people, they would use those scoops there. They had everything under control. If there was 5 eggs in there, they would take 2 and just sprinkle around the nest, and the birds, that wouldn't disturb the birds. They would continue breeding and young ones. And swans and ducks and all that. So that's the egg scoops there. Because he was always told, if you find a nest, don't go near the nest, don't handle the eggs, because the bird will throw them out. Well, they had a lot of knowledge, so they would use those scoops to scoop the eggs out. You could still trap food with all these pieces.
Have you ever done it yourself?
I never ever done it, because why should I when there's a fishing line there and you put worms on the hook and shrimps and whatever. Yeah, it's just that if I had to survive, if I was somewhere and I had to survive, I would survive. My life was my family life. In the catalogue you'll read the stories. We never had a house. We lived traditional. We went bush. We lived in the bush because where did we belong? We weren't belong on a mission because we had to be off by 6 o'clock. We wasn't entitled to a lot of things. So Dad was a shearer, so we went bush. And So that's where I get all my knowledge of survival, because he's from the West Coast, you see. So he knew all the way to find water, what food to how to find the food like goannas and all that, and how to trap different things, you know, and just by looking and tracking them, he'd find food for us.
Thank you for telling us all this and answering our questions.
And I just hope you got something out of it, you know? And to see the beautiful work that can be produced just with some grass. So I'll leave it up to the future generation now. Remember, one day's workshop I went to, and have a look around you. Yeah.